It's showtime, folks. Welcome in Wednesday edition. Chase and Big Joe, and I screwed up what I told Dr. Crane to do. That's awesome.
Come on, man. Let's do this
okay.
Today.
It's okay. You know what? Play it.
Cerro swats it away. 2 seconds, folks. Guess what? There's a game six upcoming Friday night in Smashville as the Predators win this must-win game by a 2-1 count.
That's Pete Weber. The final call last night. The Predators are still alive. I had this whole thing planned out, and I messed it up. Good job, me. So they will live to fight another day. Friday night, time to be determined at Bridgestone Arena, game number six. It was a wild one. It was a fun hockey game, but the Preds skate away with the win. What's up, JoJo?
What's happening, man? I hope the game. What would happen if they say the game is at 10 a.m. Friday? I'd love it.
I'm here for it. Awesome. Give me every bit of it.
Would that not be great?
And that place would be packed.
Yeah. 10 a.m. Friday.
That'd be awesome.
They serve breakfast outside. I'm all about it.
It'd be fantastic. So anyway, hey, but you
hockey
know what?
Matinee.
There's a game six, and let's do this. I know. I after Sunday, I was like, they're done. You do that reverse psychology.
Everybody said that. Yeah.
And then they come out and win last night, and they played their tails off last night, man. So
they did.
Friday is going to be amazing because I think we put last week behind us. Everybody was upset Friday because you were crying like a big baby last Friday because you couldn't get in the arena without getting strip searched, which you enjoyed. You said you didn't.
No. Yeah,
so Friday is going to be nuts, and so good for Nashville, good for this hockey team. It's great, man.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. So I want to take you through last night and my watching the game, but first. We have to give a shout out. We like giving shout outs on this show, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Our good friend Ashley, you know Ashley. Today is her birthday.
Okay.
So happy birthday to Ashley.
There's actually a better birthday today.
There's no better birthday than Ashley.
There is. It's my son's birthday.
Oh, okay. Well,
they both can share it.
Great people.
Yep.
Ashley and JJ share a birthday.
That's right. So happy birthday to everybody out there on May 1st.
Today's a big birthday for JJ, isn't it?
18.
Whew.
I know, man. 18.
I feel old.
Tell me about it.
So there you go. Happy birthday to Ash and JJ. All right, now let me take you through me watching the game last night. I decided, you know what? It's a late game, but I'm going to go down to the local watering hole, hang out with the crew, and watch the game. And my plan was to watch the whole game, you know, but you never know. Like, might decide to leave. The Braves were on, too. So I watched first two periods. At the end of the second period, it got very intense. The Braves are trying to rally, so I'm like trying to watch both. Braves end up losing. Go into the third period, and you know, at that point, it's getting late, everybody's tired, and they score. Vancouver scores, goes up 1-0. So I look at my friend Phil and I go, you know what, we got to change this up for the good of the team. I'm gonna go home. I'm going to leave, and I guarantee you, I said this, I guarantee you, when I get in the car, they're going to score. That's going to happen. So I walk out to the parking lot. I wait till a TV timeout. I wait till a TV timeout. I get in my car. I turn on the radio, and this is what I hear.
A minute 46 on the power play. Joshua in the box for boarding Evangelista. Forsberg in front, Yossi,
right
behind him,
there
it's in the net. Predators have tied it up on the power play.
Yossi made the charge, and then Nyquist came in and got that poke check underneath Shelov's, and that's what put it in.
There you go. As I'm in the parking lot, and so I'm like screaming in my car, and of course they text me, don't ever come back. So I'm not banned because I'm bad luck.
So did that make it 1-1?
That was 1-1. And then I got home to watch the rest. I mean, I live 3 minutes from the place. So I get home to watch the rest, and Carrier gives him the – I mean, I was like, look, we're getting overtime. This has the makings of they're going to stress us out even more. It's already late. I mean, Dr. Crane's barely awake this morning.
Yeah. But
don't start.
Who cares?
Don't start.
That's right.
It doesn't matter, Joe.
That's right.
It doesn't matter.
He got 6 hours sleep, and this is how he acts.
You're one of those people that is like you're the old school football coach of like fatigue is just a mindset.
Get up, just get up and go, man.
If you're tired, you're tired. It's okay to be tired. He's here,
and it's not 6 hours in one night. It's in 48 hours.
He's been fixing ovens and sanding doors.
I did sand doors over there.
You know, all that stuff.
And making tarts.
Making tarts.
Yep. Not pop tarts, but tarts. All right. So look, I fell asleep.
Do you want me to hit him? I'll hit him.
I would love.
I fell asleep. So it was 1-1. Carrier scored to win it with how much time to go?
I mean, it was like 5 minutes or something like that from what I remember. I mean, they had to kill off the 6-on-5.
Oh, not again. What was that like when you saw them come out with a 6-on-5? Like, oh, God.
I was – and Sissons fell down, too. I was like, oh, no. No, but I was stressed. I mean, as was everybody.
You know, we talk about big wins, but mentally for the Nashville Predators to win the game on the road, to come back after what happened on Sunday, and to kill off the 6-on-5s, where if they would have allowed that last night, it would have been devastating to this franchise.
Oh, yeah.
The fact they knocked all that stuff off. And, you know, we talk about this all the time. They fought. They kept fighting to the very end, and now they're coming back for game 6. It's great. I mean, it's Friday night is going to be fantastic in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, and look, I'll give credit to Vancouver, and Andrew Brunette said this in his post-game press conference. The pressure they brought, I mean, they were, like, anytime the Predators were on the power play and somebody would have the puck, all of a sudden there were four dudes on him. Like, I mean, it would just – they – smother you, and so getting a goal there in this series, like, has been just almost impossible, but they did it, and
they
got
it done.
It's all about that belief, and I loved Bruno's message, you know, going into it, of we've been resilient all year.
Yeah,
why stop now?
Right,
you know.
Oh man, do you think after what happened last week, we kidded earlier about this, but Friday night, we'll go back to how it worked with game ops, crowd, environment, and everything. Like,
yeah, I mean, I like Sunday was better. Sunday was a lot better. Okay. Sunday felt like a Preds game. There were two standing ovations. They did bust out Run This Town for the third period.
Good.
Just put it back.
Yep.
Just put it back.
Let's try not to outdo
They brought
ourselves.
Glorious back. Like, they. It's like, look. I think sometimes
it's a tradition.
Sometimes when you're in, and I do it too. Like in my position, you overthink things.
Yeah,
it's like, you know what? I got to change it because I didn't come up with it. So I need to change it. And I don't. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's just like because you want to find the next great thing,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you overthink it. Sometimes it's right in front of you, and it's like, you know what? If it ain't broke, don't fix it,
baby. Get down there and have fun.
But they had Will Levis and Lloyd Cushenberry as the towel wavers and snapping the catfish. You had Luan and his daughter, Luan chugging the beer and his daughter chugging the water, which was great. And so it definitely had that feel. I think you're going to get that Friday night.
Good.
So.
Good. We should have that.
Yeah, I think you're going to get that. I think it's going to be bumping out there on the plaza with a big party. Stillman has already – I mean, I'm going to put this out there. Stillman has already said they are 2-0 when Barry Trotz is on the show on a game day. So Barry has to come on the show Friday.
Okay.
So, I mean, you don't mess with that.
You know,
so.
I listened to Barry yesterday with Stillman, and, you know, what I like about Barry is that there was no panic in his voice.
No.
There was no stress.
I thought he was going to coach it. Like, I listened to that too, and I was like, is Barry going to be a second coach on the bench?
Right.
Like the second head coach? Like, he sounds like he's, you know, he's Coach Barry. He sounds like that.
Yeah, and I thought it was a good question by Jared asking him, like, does Andrew Brunette bounce things off of you because you've been there? He's like, yeah, we have a good back and forth, the things that go on. But it was great because the insights to your general manager playing a crucial game – what, game 5, and he's on talking about – I mean, it's open book. So it was a really good interview hearing Barry do that. And I was like, man, I feel like I'm on the bench with him.
Well, and the cool – obviously, this is very early in Barry's tenure, but he could join a very short list. Like, if this all goes the way we hope it does, and I think it will, and they win Stanley Cups and have a ton of success with him as the GM, you know, there's not many that can say they've done it as a coach and a GM.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean – Bowman, obviously, but
don't put the beer cart before the horse.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, like, that's
right.
That's something that's cool to think about.
Yeah,
that
we
he
love.
Could be in that company. But
that dude is so beloved. I mean, even, you know, he loves boneheads like us. I mean, that's why Barry.
I'll
is
never
so
forget.
Awesome.
I will never forget. There's two there. There's two moments that were like, okay, Barry Trotz is one of those guys. Your last show that I put a lot of work into.
Thank
when you,
pal.
Left to go to Channel 4.
9 years ago.
9 years ago.
Thank you.
I lined up a bunch of guests,
yep.
And Barry Trotz was your last guest. And he had left. He was in Washington at the time.
That's right.
I got a hold of him. I told him that you were leaving. He said, absolutely. And we played the old coffee in Brazil, the coffee with the coach theme.
Yeah.
And, like, the look on your face was like, no.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you said that. You're like, no way.
Yep. That was great.
And it was Barry. And then my favorite almost is they win the Stanley Cup in Washington. And I'm doing the midday show with Darren and Willie at the time. And I say to them, I'm like, I mean, do we think – let's try him. Let's – and they're like, oh, don't – you know, he's – they just won the cup. It's like 2 days after.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's exhausted. I'm like, well, I'm going to call him. I'm going to just see. So I called him. It was the day after. I called him. He answers the phone, and I'm like, Barry, it's Chase. He goes, yeah, Chase, how you doing? And I go, well, congratulations. And he goes, yeah, I'm just cleaning coolers out. We've had a – we've been busy the last couple of days with some parties, but yeah, I'd love to come on with you guys.
Like then? Like you come on like right then?
Yeah, I ran in the studio and I go, hey, he's coming on in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And he did.
He's also told the best joke on this show ever about Winnipeg is so flat when he grew up there that the land is so flat that one time his dog ran away and he could see him running for 3 days.
I remember that.
And he didn't laugh, and I'm in tears. It's just the funniest thing. His dog ran away, you could see him running
away.
He's
not wrong. I've been to Winnipeg. It's very flat. We landed when I was with them. That was the year that Washington won the cup. And we landed, and I remember looking out the window, and I looked at Darren, and I'm like, this is it? Like,
wow.
It was flat, and it's an older-looking town. Like, it kind of looks like the 90s, like it's just older. I mean, that's just kind of how the architecture is. And it's dusty because there's just a lot of dust and stuff. So I was just like, wow.
Why do people live there then?
I don't know. They love it.
Okay.
So
doesn't sound too – you won't be called to do the Chamber of Commerce speech.
No, but what was funny after that, there was a sports radio station there that, like, I was on there, like, four or five times. Like, we just got to know each other.
Oh,
and
nice.
So they would always have me on whenever the Preds and Jets were playing.
Now, you should sharpen up your CFL knowledge and be all time with them.
The Blue Bombers.
Yep. Go on with them all throughout the year.
Ricky would give me some Blue Bomber stats to drop.
Not to deviate from this, there was some NFL team that drafted a Canadian football player this weekend. I forget what team it was. The Jets, maybe, or the Giants?
The Bills.
Bills.
It was a guard. Oh, wow.
A guard.
Out of British Columbia.
They drafted a guy from the Canadian Football League.
I believe.
No. This was New York or the Giants or the Jets. They drafted a guy from, I think he played for Toronto.
Oh.
I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't see
And they
see
took
this.
Him. Yeah. And they took him. They took a Canadian Football League player.
Also a guy from England that got drafted as well.
Yeah, that's an international thing, stuff, whatever. But anyway, it's congrats to the Preds. And then do we have a time for Game 6 on Friday?
No, not yet. We'll probably
– don't be 8:30.
No, I think – okay, this is what I think. Again, this is just me speculating. I don't want anybody to hold me to this. I'm just looking at – reading the tea leaves, as they say.
Okay.
I think it's a 6:30 or a 7 because the only other games that would take place that day – one series is probably going to end tonight because I think Edmonton beats LA tonight. That series would be over.
Okay.
So you take that out. Vegas and Dallas are playing, but that game would be in Las Vegas. So it would make sense. And if LA wins tonight, that game's in Los Angeles. So you have two West Coast games would have to be later. So the Predators here would have to be earlier.
Okay.
Look at three games that night. So
the amazing Kreskin chasing
the woods.
Yeah, if you're older, you'd get that joke. The amazing Kreskin is Chase McCabe. Google it and you'll enjoy it.
I just thought I'd be Karnak the Magnificent.
That too.
Yeah. 615-737-1025. Your reaction to the Predators win last night in Vancouver. They stay alive. Plus, we'll talk NFL with John McClain coming up at 9:30. It's the Chase and Big Joe Show on this Wednesday, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Jason Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. For those about to rock, we salute you. This is a good, like, we're coming for you anthem.
Yep.
The only reason that they won't use this is because this is Columbus's goal song.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. That's all right.
This is a goal song?
Yeah.
I need energy for a goal song.
Because they remember the at the end of the song where he says, for those about to rock, fire, we salute you, and that's when they fire the cannon.
Okay, that still takes too long to get to it. I mean, yeah, that's why people that come to a Preds game when the Preds score have never been before and the Tim McGraw song goes, they lose their mind. Yeah. People lose their mind on that, which is great because it's loud, it's fast, it gets right to the point. You know what just happened. That would take forever to me, like, oh, yay, team,
yep,
to get going.
A lot of you are texting and asking if we know a game time yet. We do not. Keep in mind that excuse me. Sorry.
Good Lord.
Bless you.
You all right?
Thank you. No, I'm not, actually. Keep
good
in mind
myth.
That there's two games tonight that affect Friday. Vegas at Dallas and then Los Angeles at Edmonton. If Edmonton wins tonight, that series is over. Dallas and Vegas are tied at two. So that, you know, obviously there's going to be a game Friday night in that series. So my guess is the league may wait until after these games tonight to actually release the times.
Donovan, we were kidding. He says a 10 a.m. game would suck. Already bought tickets at a big risk. I don't go off work until 6. Praying they don't make it earlier. No, they will.
There's not going to be a 10 a.m.
I mean, my grandpa would tell me, you know, growing up, you know, when he was in the 40s and 50s, baseball would have afternoon games, you hear on the radio. I mean, once TV got involved, that all. Remember, there were World Series games when I was in high school that played during the day. And once TV got involved, that's on the weeknights.
Yeah, but there's one sports entity that has kept true. I mean, a majority of their games are 1:20 in the afternoon. That's the Chicago Cubs. And I love that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's like a big thing in Chicago that, like, you do not mess with that.
You were, I think you're maybe a year old, but in August of 88 when they did their first night game,
yeah,
one of the most hellacious, awful summer storms went through Chicago that night and just, like, was awful. And they had to postpone the game. It was like the baseball gods are saying,
nope,
we don't like this. And nope, it was awful. But that was, God, that was 1988.
I've been to 3 games at Wrigley, and they've all been day games, and they've been awesome.
It's the best.
So I want to do a night game at Wrigley, but I haven't done that. So
well, why don't you go do that then?
I will. I might do it this summer after the Predators win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah,
I will do that.
That's right. But I need them not to. I don't have a passport, so I need them to play no more Canadian teams.
Well, they're probably, if they get out of this series, going to end up going to Edmonton.
Come on, man. Could you do better than this? You're the boss around here. Make things happen.
I will try.
Okay.
Alex from Nashville, why is game 6 not tomorrow? I think there's something at the arena. That's why.
Pearl Jam is in Vancouver.
Well, that.
I know. I'm just saying for 7, if it does go to 7.
He looks so adorable saying that over the glass, too.
Yeah.
You look adorable.
Thanks.
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why it's not Thursday.
Maybe they give them just a break. Maybe there's like something about the
3,000. They do sometimes. If they can put a travel day in, they'll put a travel day in. So
that's okay. And let the tensions build from the day. Plus, you know, the guys flying back on Southwest, it's going to take a while with the delay and getting back here and everything, getting their A-boarding pass, which I'm kidding. I know this. They fly back charter. That's why I don't like all the, oh, they got to fly all that way. They fly on a charter plane with mucho food right there at their disposal. So no sympathy. Just get back here and win game 6. That's all that matters.
Richard in Murfreesboro says, at 10 a.m. today, can you discuss why Bally was cut off the air by Xfinity during the Preds broadcast in the third period? I mean, luckily I switched to TBS to see the end, but we missed our hometown broadcast. Why do we got to wait till 10? I mean,
Well, here I've got it pulled up. Here's what the thing said. The owner of Bally Sports is in bankruptcy proceedings, and we have, this is from Xfinity, we've offered them multiple options to continue carrying their networks. They have declined each one, and we no longer have the rights to continue carrying the content. As a result, we'll be issuing proactive monthly credits to customers for the loss of this network. Scan this code for more.
So you can probably explain this better than I can, but my general understanding is for a station to be on a cable or satellite service, there is what they call a carriage fee. And that's why your cable bill is what it is, because you're not only paying for the Xfinity service, you are paying for the right to have these channels.
Correct.
Because they have to pay. It's like a resale thing. It's like when you go to Best Buy to buy an Apple computer, Best Buy bought the Apple computer and now they're going to resell it to you. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like that. And so this happens all the time. Like I remember last summer during the Titans preseason, Nexstar that owns Channel 2 was in a thing with DirecTV, and for like the whole month of August, Channel 2 wasn't available on DirecTV.
It happens.
So it happens a lot. It's happened with the NFL Network. It's happened with ESPN. They try to avoid it because they know that's a giant pain when it happens. Yeah. But I thought it was a little I thought it was a little unnecessary for Xfinity to be like, they're in bankruptcy court. Like, to put that on there. I mean, that's true, they are, but, like...
Hey, it's not Xfinity's fault.
No, it's not. But, I mean, you got to really kick them while they're down.
Yeah, why not? So, I mean, it's instead of kicking me while I'm down, I had nothing to do with it. So, I think you pay something like, on Xfinity, like, if you get the complete package, you pay, like, $7 a month, I was told, like, for ESPN.
I mean, so it all
adds up, everything adds up. So, I don't know what to tell you, and that you can scramble and find something else. But as the game Friday will be on... Is it still on Bally?
Look, yeah. I mean, like, if you have DirecTV or another service, like, you can still get Bally's. It's just the largest provider, like what we have here at the station. You guys, last night, it went out on you. You had to go to TBS to watch the game. And so, look, it sucks. And obviously, this is a big thing that they're going to have to figure out. You know, the Braves are there. The Preds are there. The Grizzlies are there.
I mean,
a lot of people watch Bally Sports, but... And I obviously I want like I where I went last night was like, hey, put it on Bally's, let's get Willie and Mace and Lindsay and, you know, that crew. And I know everybody wants to watch that. At least during the playoffs, you have the secondary options of the national provider. So, but yeah, it sucked.
Right.
It sucked for a lot of people last night when all of a sudden that happened. So I know Jared had put it out there because I guess he saw the story and was trying to spread the word that, you know, at 11 o'clock it was going to go dark. I think it was just – I mean, it was like the start of the third period, I think, is when it went dark. So.
Yeah, we were watching the game, and all of a sudden it was at a commercial break, and then the screen went black, and then it went purple, and then it had the giant, you know,
wow.
Xfinity thing. Yeah. I believe the exact time, if anybody cares, it was 11:24 in this building.
Yeah.
So
I do care. I need the exact time.
Okay.
Coming up next, we'll shift into some football post-draft. Our man John McClain going to join us for 30 minutes. We'll do that. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe on this Wednesday, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And as we do every Wednesday at 9:30, we say hello to the great John McClain, HoustonTexans.com. That's where you can get his work. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Just digesting from Predators in the playoffs and still alive, and obviously the draft and what all the Titans did. What were kind of your thoughts on J.C. Latham going 7th overall? I think some of the ideas that everybody had were off the board. They go with the big boy out of Alabama, and they're going to make him into a left tackle is what Bill Callahan has been tasked to do. What did you think about that pick?
I thought it was a great pick. I think that Bill Callahan is doing with Latham what he did with Jedrick Wills from Alabama when they drafted him. He played primarily right tackle. He moved him to left tackle. And it helps that you have one of the best offensive line coaches in NFL history, and that's what Bill Callahan is. So that should make the transition smoother, and they don't have to worry about the left side of their offensive line for a long time.
what was your kind of evaluation of what Houston ended up doing in their draft, and then the AFC South overall and where they are post-draft?
The Texans had 9 picks. They didn't have one in the first round. They traded that for an extra 2 next year with Minnesota, and they had 5 defensive, 4 offensive, and their first pick was Kamari Lassiter from Georgia. And then they surprised us in the second round. Everybody thought they're going to take a defensive tackle because that seems like a need position, because both of their defensive tackles from last year are gone. And those guys, Malik Collins to San Francisco and Sheldon Rankins to Cincinnati, those guys played very well against the run, and Rankins was a good pass rusher. So we thought for sure that's what they're going to do. Instead, they took an offensive tackle, and he's a redshirt sophomore, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. They had him rated higher. One of the things our GM, Nick Caserio, tries to do, he tries as hard as he can to get a player to meet O'Ryan's wants for his system. And then a safety, Callum Bullock. When you have 3 of your top 4 safeties spend the second half of the season on IR and you're playing safeties, veterans signed off the street during the season, it's amazing they were able to play as well as they did. So those top 3 picks will help. Cody Stover, Kate Stover from tight end from Ohio State in the 4th round, he might be the pick everybody likes the most because he's reunited with C.J. Stroud, but mainly too. NFL Network ran so many videos of him working on his family farm and rubbing a bull's, massaging a bull's skin to make his hands harder and tougher. And Rich Eisen on NFL Network couldn't get enough of that one. And hey, if it works, you know, who knows. But there were 2 things that were consistently stood out with the Texans, and they did this last year in Ryan's first season. They drafted a lot of guys who were captains in college, and they said this is not something that is a necessity, but if you are a captain and it shows what your teammates thought of you and what kind of leader you are. And then they drafted their last 6. All had been in college at least 5 years, and 1 was in a 6th year. And D'Amico Ryans thinks that experience in college will help for the transition to the NFL and allow them to be able to contribute quicker. Colts got the guy that I got to know here during the Lombardi banquet, Leitu, an edge rusher from UCLA. We were so impressed with him down here when he won Lombardi Award. He's going to be very fearsome for all these quarterbacks in the AFC South. And then, the Jaguars, they have – it's funny, a team that had a winning record and has so many needs. I'm guessing if Doug Peterson doesn't get in the playoffs or if he takes a step back into a losing record, his job could be in jeopardy. And I liked the Tavondre Sweat pick surprised a lot of people because the Titans took him so high. And it's not the DWI. Obviously, they vetted that. But it's 366 pounds. I don't know if there's anybody productive in a defensive line who weighs that much. And they always worried about his weight at Texas. But he can play. Having him and Jeffrey Simmons next to each other, if he's going full speed and he doesn't get winded, especially on rundowns, that'll help Simmons so much. It's almost like Simmons made that pick because it just works out so well for him the way it did Byron Murphy, who was the first defensive lineman drafted by Seattle. Having those 2 guys in front of the middle linebacker, boy, that should make that guy's job a lot easier. And then is it Cedric Gray? Is that the inside linebacker who's going to replace Al Shaair? From North Carolina, 4th yep. round pick. I thought he was an underrated pick who didn't get a lot of attention before the draft because everybody was watching Drake May. And I thought he was a real good pick, too. Should compete for that starting job that Al Shaair that's available when he signed to be reunited with D'Amico Ryans.
We're talking to the great John McClain today on the Chasing Big Joe show. John, you know, when Latham was drafted and then Rand comes out and so does Callahan and say he's going to start at left tackle, and later it's like, well, he might be at right tackle. Well, he might be at guard. All this, you know, talk that's going on. Let me ask you this. You saw Bruce Matthews up close and personal play tackle, guard, and center. What made Bruce Matthews – I'm not saying J.C. Latham is Bruce Matthews, but what made Bruce Matthews so good that maybe Latham could attain to that he was able to play these different positions at a high level?
Bruce Matthews, offensive line coach, late Bob Young, said one time that Bruce is so light on his feet. He's almost like a ballerina. I think you could put a tutu on him. And that was one of the best quotes I've ever gotten. And because everybody was talking to Bruce, giving him a hard time about putting on a tutu and getting on a stage. He also said that while Mike Munchak is a technician who does everything I ask him, he said most of the time Bruce just ignores me because he can do it without using the technique because he's so gifted. So Bruce was really smart, and he was very gifted, and he is a great athlete. He started the equivalent of one season at every offensive line position. And a lot of people in the NFL think he's the greatest offensive lineman in NFL history. But first of all, you got to be really athletic. Now, in Latham's case, he's got good feet, but he's also really strong. And so there's never been an offensive lineman like Matthews, but there have been many who made the successful transition to right to left tackle, but it's not easy. You know, it's like you're doing everything bass-ackwards from what you're used to doing it. But when you've got the athleticism and you're smart and you got a great coach, that's going to make the transition so much easier.
With Callahan coming out saying and Rand saying he's going to start at left tackle immediately, confidence-wise, what does that do for the young man thinking, all right, we're going to start you left tackle, go forward, we're going to work with you? I mean, there's a lot of ways it can go with this, but go ahead and say he's our left tackle. I know there's a lot of pressure, but again, this is a National Football League. There's always going to be pressure on these guys.
He was always going to be the first or second lineman taken, just depending on your taste. You know, the big, strong, physical guy, as opposed to Joe Alt, the athletic guy. The Chargers took Alt, Titans took Latham, and I think he knew, everybody was telling him he's going to play left tackle in the NFL. And now, if he had gone to the Chargers, he would have played right tackle, as they got Rashawn Slater there. And so I think this was a perfect thing for him. We're guessing that Brian Callahan's going to, the running game's going to be important to him. Every year, they had multiple running backs. Joe Mixon had 1,000 yards. Because you need the running game to take the pressure off the quarterback. You know, it's not just in the third or fourth quarter when you're behind and the defense knows you're going to be throwing and you have to abandon the run.
Right.
But in this case, it's if you don't have the horses to run the ball or the linemen to do it, they can also abandon it. So I think that's going to be important. Callahan, everywhere he's been, they've had a strong running game. And Brian comes from Cincinnati, where they had ballots, which helped Joe Burrow and helped Jake Browning last year. So I think Latham's ideal. The fact that they've solidified that left side, I think, is tremendous based on where they were 2 years ago.
He is John McClain. We'll have more with him coming up next here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, presented by Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, here on this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with John McClain. John, I have to ask you, being down in Texas, I know you're in Houston, but thoughts on Ezekiel Elliott reuniting with the Cowboys? Is that's their big move of the offseason, apparently.
I think one of the biggest head scratchers in the draft was Cowboys not drafting a running back. Zeke hadn't done anything since 2020, I think. And if they're expecting him to rebound and be what he was when he came there in 2016, everybody thinks they're nuts. At least he didn't get used up last year with the Patriots. I think they talked so much about Texas running back Jonathan Brooks that the Panthers traded ahead of him to get him. And right now it looks like their starters would be Rico Dowdle or maybe Elliott. And that's not what Deuce Vaughn. Prescott needs. Deuce Vaughn, but he's not a full-time guy. And so maybe they got something up their sleeve we don't know about. But their offseason has been disappointing in free agency and disappointing on the running back. Now, they got they drafted good offensive linemen. They got a good pass rusher. But it's just mystifying how Dak Prescott is going into such an important season. And you let Tony Pollard get away to the Titans, and I think he'll be better this year than he was last season now that he's a year removed from surgery on an ACL. I think the Titans are getting him at the right time. But I don't know what the Cowboys are doing.
You know what's funny, though? I look at this, and it's something that you said several months ago that has stuck with me, that I feel like this is Jerry. This is Jerry's plan all along, that McCarthy's in a lame duck year. He's got 1 year left on the contract. He's not going to be the head coach after this year. I'd be very, very surprised. And then he's kind of looking at, all right, is Dak really the guy of the future? He's put nothing around it. I mean, yeah, he's got some receivers and CeeDee Lamb and stuff like that. But I kind of think he's looking more beyond this year and probably knows this year is going to be whatever it is. And then he makes a coaching change. That's what I kind of think is going to happen.
At his age, he shouldn't be looking beyond next month.
Yeah.
And two that were really interesting, Arthur Blank, which I think taking Penix is the dumbest decision I've seen in 48 drafts by the Falcons.
Yeah, that GM's going to get fired.
Not because of Penix, but because of Kirk Cousins and that entire situation. You know, owners who hit 80s, they get desperate. And if Mike McCarthy wins 12 games again, I think he'll bring him back. Jerry has never had a quick hook on a coach. But they certainly have not helped their offense. And I don't know if they got some undrafted free agent that they think can help them. But they haven't maximized what they could do on offense. And you guys know there were a lot of good running backs after the first round, especially in the third through fifth rounds. And it just doesn't make any sense unless Rico Dowdle, they're putting a lot of eggs in his basket. And if McCarthy gets fired, a lot of people think he'll turn to Bill Belichick. The problem with Bill Belichick, like in Atlanta, he wanted to get his band back together. And if you are Terry Fontenot, the GM over there, and you have final say, and Bill Belichick is looking at you while you're sitting down saying, I want so-and-so, how can you possibly turn him down if you want somebody else? So the Cowboys, based on what's at stake to them next season, just wasn't very impressed at all with the running backs. And then the Falcons, the Penix picks, may go down as the biggest head scratcher in draft history.
Yeah, John, I was going to ask you about the Penix thing. You know, it would have been funny if the Falcons would have drafted Spencer Rattler in the fourth round just to make it a joke, just add more quarterbacks to the team. Then we know that had been a big joke. But when you saw that the Penix got drafted right there, your reaction, mine was like, oh, this has got to be a joke.
First thing I thought of is Cousins is not where they want him to be on his surgery to repair that Achilles and be ready to go. And it turns out that's not true. It was really weird because the GM Fontenot's in his third season, I believe. And if Penix, he said, if he doesn't play for 4 or 5 years, that's a good problem for us to have. And I'm thinking, yeah, and you probably won't be there. And Raheem Morris might not be there. He just fired Arthur Smith after 3 years. And the owner's getting more frustrated because he's getting older. How they sold that to Arthur Blank, the whole reason Arthur Blank told them to sign Kirk Cousins, no matter what it took, is because he thought Cousins gave him the best chance to win now, to dethrone the Buccaneers in the NFC South. And that's not what they did. Could have had any player, defensive player in the draft, and they haven't had a really good pass rusher since like John Abraham 2 decades ago. They had a terrible pass rush last season. And, yes, they did draft defensive linemen after the first pick, and maybe they'll be really good. And I felt sorry for Penix, too, because he missed so much time with injuries before he transferred to Washington. He's going to be 24 this month. And so if he sits for 4 years, let's see, 24, 25, 26, 27, he'll be 28 years old before he's the starter if Cousins' contract expires. So there's some people out there that liked it. I don't see any possible way you can like that move.
Oh, absolutely. Another thing, can Tom Brady just shut his mouth and go on? I mean, he keeps coming back, John, with, you know, well, the door's open. I might consider this. I might do this and that. Because what it does, it upsets the balance of a team and everything. Can we just have Tom Brady say, all right, I'm done, I'm finished, and not talk about him coming back anymore?
I think it's kind of pitiful that he still wants to play. He wants to play for a contender. There's no way you're going to have a contender available unless the starter gets hurt and the backup plays well. And then what is Brady ready to step in during the season and play? I don't think so. One more thing about Cousins and Penix. Cousins throws one interception. It's okay. But if he, say, throws one in the end zone, they lose the game, they're going to have a controversy. They're going to have – and that's the last thing you need when you're trying to win a division is a distraction. And they're going to have a big-time quarterback controversy, and they're going to say they don't, and they're going to say it's not a distraction, and it is. There's just for so many reasons, this was not a good deal. And I don't care that they don't have their number one. They might not have their number one pick next year. It just makes no sense when everything is about winning now.
Yes, indeed. John, appreciate it as always, my friend. We look forward to these conversations every week, and we'll do it again next week.
Guys, thank you very much, as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us from Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. Coming up next, we get back into the Preds' big win last night in Vancouver. They're still alive. They were able to scratch and claw in any analogy you want to use to keep the series alive, and now it'll come back to Bridgestone Arena Friday night. We'll discuss that in hour number two next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.